So once again, it's Earth Day, and I'm taking a little stock of my life and my lifestyle. Is that what you're doing today, Lynn Scherr?
No need, John. I've done that long ago.
Wow.
I've given up lots of things to help contribute to improving life on the planet.
Really? You got a long list there?
It's getting longer. Let's see. I've given up plastic bags.
Nice.
I drive a Prius.
Impressive.
I print on both sides of the paper.
Didn't think of that.
Cool, huh? I turn the water off when I brush my teeth twice a day.
Thanks for sharing.
I have stopped eating Chilean sea bass.
Whoa.
And thank goodness my apartment building recycles. And two, John?
Well, I have two cars still. Neither are hybrids.
Gas guzzler.
My wife and I have four kids.
And they, of course, recycle.
Well, not really. We're mostly organic.
Mostly? Mostly doesn't cut it, John.
I guess not.
So, Hockenberry, what have you got to help out planet Earth on Earth Day?
I'm a public radio host. Does that help?
Oh, John. Well, it's a start. There's your takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Well, public radio host will just have to do this morning. It's Wednesday, April 22nd, Earth Day. I'm John Hockenberry, and Lynn Scherr is in for Adora Udoji. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, John, even though you don't do all those good things.
Ahead this hour, polls are open in South Africa. We're going to take a closer look at the election there and how to win a cosmic war in the Middle East and elsewhere. Those stories coming up, but first, headlines. CIA officials adopted harsh interrogation tactics without any real legislative oversight or investigation into the origins of the techniques. That's according to an analysis released by our partner, the New York Times, this morning. The use of torture was approved at a series of high-level meetings back in 2002 without researching the history of methods like waterboarding. Yesterday, President Obama didn't rule out the possibility of prosecuting the lawyers who crafted the interrogation policy. Voters lined up before sunrise in South Africa to vote in one of the biggest elections there since the apartheid regime ended 15 years ago.
It's a secret ballot. Really, it's very important that everybody must understand that, because I think the future of our country in part depends on people voting according to their consciences.
23 million people will be voting. They're registered anyway. The governing African National Congress is expected to overwhelmingly win, and we'll have more on that in a moment. Femi Oke is here. Good morning.
Hello there, John. A public defender says that the sole surviving pirate from the cargo ship attack last week is just a frightened young man.
I would say very scared, in pain, confused, concerned about not being able to practice his religion.
A crewman from the Maersk, Alabama, said that the teen was the first to board the ship, firing an AK-47 at the captain that he later held hostage. And former Cuban leader Fidel Castro says that President Obama misinterpreted his brother Raul when he said that Cuba wants to be totally open in diplomatic talks with the U.S.
In honor of Earth Day, President Obama is heading to Iowa to pitch his energy plan and eco-friendly job creation programs. Asian markets are flat this morning. The Dow opens today at 79.70. The S&P starts trading at 850. Lynn Scherr, it's Earth Day, as we talked about. What is the one poison you still won't give up? Don't tell me yet. Later on in the hour, we'll find out. But tell us your poison at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. What you will not give up on Earth Day.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
I'm Lynn Scherr in for Adora Udoji, and it may be Earth Day, but it's also always Election Day somewhere, and today it is South Africa, where the general election is seen as the most important since the end of apartheid 15 years ago.
A lot of people are willing to be involved in the change in South Africa now, and a lot of publicity has come through America with Obama and those elections. I think a lot more people are voting, and the turnout is going to be great.
The winner is not in doubt. The African National Congress, led by Jacob Zuma, is expected to get a landslide once again. But what will that mean for this big and powerful nation? What might it mean for us here in the United States? We're going to get the inside scoop on Jacob Zuma, the likely next president, from Andrew Meldrum, Africa editor of the web-based Global Post in Boston. He spent 27 years in South Africa. He knows Mr. Zuma well. But first, before we get there, let us skip across the ocean to the BBC's Africa editor, Martin Plaut, who is standing outside a polling station in a township in Cape Town, South Africa. Martin, welcome to the program. How are things there?
Thanks very much, Lynn. Yes, they're fine. It's a bit of an overcast day. Not quite a township. This is a suburb. I'm standing in Rondebosch. It's close to the university. I suppose you'd call it a middle-class suburb. And there have been people queuing here since, 7 o'clock. It's now 12 o'clock our time. And they're all keen to vote. This is one of 19,000 polling stations across this country. It's a large country, although perhaps not large by American standards. 23 million registered voters, 12 million women and 10 million men. So there's a lot of voting to get done.
And what about, Martin, the young people? We're told that this is a historic election, not only because of the importance, and we'll get to the issues in just a minute, but I gather a huge possibility for young people to be voting.
Oh, I think that is absolutely right. The young people are coming out in droves. It was actually very interesting. We spent yesterday in a township called Khayelitsha. It's a very poor area on the edge of Cape Town. And there we met two young people in their 20s who are unemployed. One of them is going to go to the polls. The other one says, what's the point? To be honest, most people are coming out to vote. They're expecting a turnout of 80%. So
wow.
That's pretty good by any standards.
80%? We don't get anything near that in this
Martin,
country.
I heard something yesterday. I wonder if you could confirm it for me. Are young voters called born frees in South Africa during this election campaign?
That's absolutely right. In other words, the people who did not live under apartheid, the people who were born since apartheid or grew up since apartheid, they're a totally different group of people. And they make up their own minds. They're into all sorts of other things. I mean, their parents' generation fought for the right to vote. And if you ask why there's an 80% turnout, you should see how hard people had to struggle for that vote. And if you see what I mean, in a sense, it's the younger people then are saying, yes, our parents are, they told us to vote, they taught us where we were going, but, we're not sure that we're going to do it. Maybe this time we'll vote the ANC, maybe next time we won't.
You mentioned unemployment. Unemployment is huge there. Crime is a problem. What are the big issues for the voters today?
Well, I think those are two of them. I mean, just to give you an idea of unemployment, it is absolutely staggering. It is the highest in the industrialized world. Officially, 23% of the population are unemployed. Unofficially, if you add in people who've just given up and stopped looking for work, it could be as high as 35 or even 40%. Now, there is no social security network for these people. They have to live on either their savings, meager as they are, or even on the tiny sums that are paid for pensions. A lot of people just live on, the pensions of their grandparents if they can't find work. It's a tough existence for people out there. So a lot of people have been saying, the thing I want from this election is a job. But that is going to be very hard in a recession, obviously. The other issue is, of course, crime. There are 18,000 murders a year in South Africa. I mean, that is just an extraordinary number. To give you a comparison, in Britain, which has more or less the same number of people, we have 600 murders a year. So this is just, this side of a small-scale civil war. One woman is raped every 30 seconds.
Martin, stand by if you would, because we want to go now to Andrew Meldrum in Boston to talk about the man whose job it will be to lead South Africa out of those problems. Andrew Meldrum, you have covered Jacob Zuma, this man who was a goat herder in the rural Zulu heartland, said to be as comfortable in leopard skins as in a pinstripe suit. Is he a suit? Is he, in fact, the leader for these times?
Well, he is going to be the leader for the times. That's virtually certain. And he's made an incredible political comeback. 2 years ago, he was down and out facing corruption charges. He was on trial for rape, and he was acquitted of rape, and the corruption charges were dropped. And he has been a very deft politician, appealing both to the populist, to the masses of South Africa, and also then making diplomatic statements and being very, very smooth. He's a charming guy, and he is going to lead South Africa.
Give us a sense from this point of view. We are used to this very smooth, very exciting leadership, charismatic leadership of Nelson Mandela, who has endorsed Jacob Zuma. We are also used to Bishop Tutu, who is very angry about Jacob Zuma. What are we in this country meant to make of him?
Well, it's hard. The jury is out on Jacob Zuma. And for instance, Archbishop Tutu has said that Jacob Zuma is not the man to lead South Africa. He was Bishop Tutu was very upset at the crowds that were outside of Jacob Zuma's rape trial. Thousands of people demonstrating day after day, very angry statements against women. They burned panties and said, "Burn the bitch, burn the bitch." So it was really an ugly scene. And Tutu said, you know, no leader of our nation can have crowds supporting him like that. And
he's also, as long as you mention women, he's also a polygamist. I know it's legal in the Zulu tribe, but he's got a couple of wives. How's that going to play here?
Well, it's really not a question of how it plays in the United States. It's a question of how it plays in South Africa. And, you know, to the majority of South Africans, of his followers, you know, that is fine. What's more difficult is, for instance, he has spoken to women's groups after his rape trial and said, "I'm sorry if anything was offensive. I believe that women have an equal place in the political system of South Africa." Likewise, on gays, he had recently made a statement saying, "Oh, if any gay comes to me, I'm going to beat him up," to a rural crowd. And then a week later in Johannesburg, he said, "Well, you know, gays actually played an important role in South Africa's fight against apartheid, and in fact, they have an important place in South African society." So he shows a flexibility of being able to play it both ways.
Let's go back to Martin Platt standing by in South Africa. Martin Platt, tell me what the folks there think about this man. Is he, in fact, the guy they want, or does he happen to be the guy of the moment?
Well, I think both are true, but I think there's a side to Jacob Zuma that we don't very often see, and that is that he is also an extremely adept negotiator and reconciler. He brought together the ANC and Inkatha, which is a Zulu-based party. He's a Zulu himself. He ended what was effectively a civil war in that province in 94. And, you know, he brought reconciliation there and he brought people together, which is why people are enormously respectful of him. The other thing he did was he played a very, very vigorous role internationally in bringing about the end of the Burundi civil war. Again, his negotiation skills are absolutely first class. He's a very clever man who has no education whatsoever, but this doesn't tell him us what he's going to be like when he becomes president. I think, you know, that's just something you cannot tell until somebody actually has the reins of power.
And just from both of you, starting with you, Martin, what about the relationship between Jacob Zuma and President Obama? What do you predict there?
I guess that they will get on. As Andrew was saying, you know, this is a very smooth guy, very charming, and I guess that they will get on pretty well. You know, Jacob Zuma is someone who has seen the international stage. He has spent many years abroad, including being trained in the Soviet Union. I mean, this guy was a fighter, huh? He was a liberation struggle fighter.
And a man that was
the international scene.
And a man that was in prison. He was on Robben Island as well.
Hmm. For 10 years and had a really hard time of it there.
Andrew Meldrum, tell me about the potential relationship with President Obama. Have the two men met, by the way?
As far as I know, they have not yet met.
What will happen when they do?
Well, I think that you'll see quite a good scene from the two of them. Jacob Zuma likes to sing. He likes to dance. He dances and sings for his campaign. And he is, you know, an authentic African leader, and he will make the most of it. He will make music, and I think Obama will receive.
We'll sing along. Well, Andrew Meldrum, Africa editor of the web-based Global Post in Boston, thank you so much. Martin Plout in a township in Cape Town, South Africa. The South African election is today. We will hear the results tomorrow. I'm Lynn Scherr.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.